Earl Monroe joins us on Sports Byline USA, NBA Hall of Fame guard, and of course named one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history. Played 13 seasons in the NBA, five of those with the Bullets, and then eight seasons with the New York Knicks. And if you want to read about his outstanding career and his life as well, I want you to check out his book. It's called Earl the Pearl, My Story. Earl, I'm interested as to why you wrote this book at this particular time.
Well, you know, I'm probably one of the only guys on the team who hasn't written a book. That, and the team I'm talking about is the 73 Knickerbocker team that won the championship that year. And I also felt that, you know, after all this time, people know me, but they don't know from where I come from. They don't know any kind of instance as to why and how I got to be who I am today. And this is the real motivating factor of doing the book. And then aside from that, it's also the 40th anniversary of the last Knick championship. And that was actually on May 8th, which will be 40 years. So it all kind of culminated together, and I thought it was a great time. I was tired of being that mystery guy. And this book here, you know, it's done in first person. And it kind of, you know, lays me out there. Things that I have done that were good and things that I've done that weren't so good. But I want people to understand and know who I am, and I felt that was the best way to do it.
Earl, usually when somebody, particularly an athlete and an accomplished athlete like you are, has a chance after many years to sit back and look at their life, not only on the court but off the court as well, they come up with an interesting perspective they may not have had when they were going through it. Did that happen to you?
Well, you know, it did happen to me, but even more so, you know, reflecting back on those times. You know, 40s, 50s, 60s. I mean, the things that I had forgotten, I thought I had forgotten, but they cropped up again. Some things that made me happy, some things that made me sad. But all in all, you know, again, all these things were responsible for me, you know, being in the position I'm in today.
In the 70s and 60s as well as the 50s, this was not a very tolerant country, and I'm just wondering, being a basketball star, did that ease in any way, or did you run into the same problems any minority or African-American had to endure during that time?
Well, I ran into an awful lot of, opposition, you know, during that time. Racial tension and things were going up. You know, in the 50s and the 60s, you know, the 60s, the height of the civil rights movement, we certainly felt, you know, the brunt of that. When I was in Philadelphia, which is where I was from, you know, we had a mild sense of it. It was like when it got warm, there were race riots. And so we had a saying that, oh, it must be spring because nobody fought in the wintertime. So, you know, yeah, we had that type of scenario going on in Philadelphia. But at the same time, when I went down south, which is, I had never been down south, I was very, very apprehensive. And, you know, being chased sometimes by the Ku Klux Klan and things of that nature, those things happened. But all in all, you know, it was the times. It wasn't such a isolated incident or such, but more or less how it was during those times. And you kind of accepted it or you rebelled against it. And most of us guys who played sports, you know, we kind of accepted where that we couldn't go here or we couldn't go there, we couldn't eat here, we couldn't eat there. We kept amongst ourselves and, you know, survived it.
One of the things I know about Philadelphia is it's a blue-collar town. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You grew up in Philadelphia. Did basketball bring you some degree of confidence and also acceptance in that town?
Well, you know, I didn't start playing basketball until I was 14. And as I was walking down the hall one day, the junior high school coach saw me, which I was about 6'3", and asked me if I played basketball. I told him, no, sir. So he asked me to come down to the gym that afternoon, and I went down to the gym and kind of fell in love with the, you know, with it. And what happened is that, you know, I wasn't very good, and people that I was playing against and whatnot, they were laughing at me and doing all kinds of things. And my mother, got on me, told me to stop whining, and she gave me this book. And with this book, she said, you just jot down all the names of all the people who are dogging you and laughing at you and whatnot. And as you get better than them, you cross their name off. And it was a sense of relief almost, because as I started getting better and I start crossing those names off, it gave me more confidence and let me know that I was getting better. And by the time I crossed all the names off, I had a real sense of stature in Philadelphia.
There were a couple of things that were important to you when you were growing up, and you write in the book, my confidence hadn't always been that great. In fact, it was during the summer before this showdown, talking about the showdown against Matt Jackson in 1961, that I began to put the building blocks into place that would help me elevate my game to another plateau. In the early part of the book, you talk about Matt Jackson and that showdown. Tell everybody about that game.
Well, it was a game. Matt Jackson was a guy who had led the city in scoring and maybe a couple years before this. And he went to school down in South Carolina. And when he left, everybody was talking about him. He was a great shooter. He didn't move that well, but he was a great shooter. If he got his feet together, he could knock it down. And then I finally made varsity my senior year, and I led the city in scoring. So what happened is that, when he left, they were talking about him, and when he came back, they were talking about me. So there were factions, the guys with me and the guys with him, and they were kind of drawing back and forth, and so we decided that we would play a game. And it'll be a one-on-one game, and essentially what it was for was the best young player in South Philadelphia. So we played at a place called Landreth in Philadelphia. It's in South Philly. And, it's interesting because there were no cell phones, there were no, Twitter, nothing like that. But word of mouth got this game around the neighborhood. If there were hundreds of people crowded around this one playground or schoolyard. And we played well. And I wind up winning that match, I think, 21-16 or something like that, and became the so-called best player, young player in South Philadelphia.
Certainly one of the focal points for you growing up in South Philadelphia was the 30th and Oakford Street Playground. Tell me a little bit about the Trotters. How did they get together, and tell everybody who the Trotters were?
Well, the Trotters were a group of guys, and we all went to junior high school together. And when I started playing, they were already on the basketball team. So 30th and Oakford Street was a playground that was actually in the black section of South Philadelphia. And so we all, kind of frequented it there. And we decided to become a team, that played like independently around the city. And we named our team the Trotters for no apparent reason, because we didn't play like the Trotters. We actually played more like the Boston Celtics, who was my team when we grew up. And it's interesting, because, I could still see Bill Russell taking the ball out of bounds, throwing it to Cousy on the sidelines, and Cousy hook passing it down to Bill Sharman, and then Sharman going to the foul line, taking a little jumper. That's how we like to play.
Was it almost blasphemy to have the Celtics as your team?
Well, pretty much so. I mean, we had a lot of arguments about that, growing up. But, one thing was that when my first pro game was against the Celtics, and I had never seen any of these guys, in person. Sam Jones was from my conference in North Carolina, in the CIAA conference, and I was kind of awed by the whole thing. But in playing with that game, after a while you stop being awed and know you got to go to work.
Is there any way in about 40 seconds to describe what a playground game is like in South Philly in the summer?
It'll be hot. It'll be sweaty. We have all these great guys on the team on the floor. And I think the most important thing about it is Philadelphia always played very organized basketball. So they were plays that were run, and we were a jump shooting and driving type of society in Philadelphia. On the other end, you'd also have about 50 guys sitting around the playground and wanting to be able to get into a game. So, you know, you had winners, you know, the good guys, they got picked. The other guys like myself, we'd sit there all day long and we'd look at the games and hope one person might say, "Hey, Earl, come on, we need another man." And so, you know, that's basically how it was every day in Philadelphia during the summertime.
Earl Monroe has joined us, the NBA Hall of Fame guard. He has a wonderful book out I hope you'll check out. It's called Earl the Pearl, My Story. We'll talk about his travel path as he went to college down at Winston-Salem State University, and he had a great coach down there in Clarence Gaines. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline.